This episode of Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by the Madrone Tap House in Old Town Eureka. Madrone has wood fire pizzas, salads, wraps, wings, and a rotating selection of local brews. Madrone is a family-owned business and sources local, organic, and non-GMO products whenever possible. What could be more Humboldt than that? Madrone has outdoor seating and offers delivery, so check them out Tuesdays through Saturdays, noon to 9 p.m. at 421 3rd Street in Old Town, or order by calling 273-5129 or online at madronetaphouse.com.
It's Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost's attempt at getting the rest of Humboldt on board with this, you know, decade-old podcast phenomenon, yeah? My name's Andrew Goff.
I'm Stephanie McGarry. Do you think Humboldt County doesn't know podcasts or a thing?
We're late adopters, right?
You know what I and many other people I know, the time that we listen to podcasts the most in Humboldt? Trimming.
That's not too stereotypical? You think that that's when podcasts are most consumed in Humboldt?
Well, I don't know about most. I mean, I'm just saying it's just the time that a lot of people I know listen to the podcast.
Hello to all you trimmers out there listening to us. Making those sounds.
I'm not saying it's the only job people do in Humboldt. You know, I'm just saying that it's one where you're sitting there doing something with your hands and, you know, you want to listen to something. You listen to podcasts, you listen to music, you know, whatever. It's common.
Well, speaking of normalizing cannabis,
that's what I was trying to.
Oh, you were leading into that? Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to.
Earlier this week, as we noted on the Lost Coast Outposts, there was a soft opening for Papa and Barkley Social. This is a spa / dispensary / consumption lounge / place to chill located in the old Kmart building next to the Papa and Barkley manufacturing facility. And our guest today is one of the people tasked with bringing this project into reality, Amy Cerincione O'Connor.
Yeah, so Amy talks with us today, not only about the Papa and Barkley chilling / spa / consumption lounge, but also some of the other projects that she's been a part of with Humboldt Bay Social, of course, the Humboldt Bay Social Club, and the opening and revamping of the Scotia Lodge, as well as just her take on cannabis culture, normalizing it, and tourism moving forward as we come out of this poopy pandemic. start welcoming people to Humboldt again.
It has been a poopy pandemic.
It's been a poopy pandemic. I've heard that a lot of people have been utilizing the benefits of cannabis to get through this poopy pandemic. Yeah. So I think it's what better time to be normalizing it. So,
Well, what do you say we talk to Amy?
I love that, Amy.
Oh,
hey, how's it going?
You're having breakfast with us.
I am.
What you having for breakfast, Amy?
I'm having leftover pasta with spinach from yesterday.
Okay, it's 11 a.m. and you're having pasta.
What meal is this? Is this breakfast?
It's brunch. Yeah.
Amy Cerincione, if you are ready to do this, we can go into this and you're putting down the pasta.
Putting down the pasta.
My mouth will not be full. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So your email signature lists you as the chief people officer of Humboldt Bay Social, and y'all are doing a lot right now, from, you know, the already established Humboldt Bay Social Club to getting the Scotia Lodge and Papa Barkley Social up and running. And we'll get to all that. But first, something we like to do on here is get people's personal histories and like how they found their way to Humboldt. And in your instance, somebody told me something interesting. So we're gonna do a little true or false. True or false, I have seen your dad on the Colbert Report.
That is true.
Someone told me, like, you know, her dad's on Rachel Maddow all the time. I'm like, what? So I went and looked this up, and You, is this a weird place to start, or you, or is this?
No, this is a hysterical place to start.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so tell people who your dad is.
My father is Joseph Cerenzioni. He is now retired, but he is an expert in nuclear non-proliferation, which is working to stop the spread of nuclear weapons. And so he just retired as the president of the Plowshares Fund, which is based in San Francisco, but also opened up an office in Washington, D.C., which is where I'm from, so that he could build an office and a base there. And yeah, I know a huge part of his job over the last decade or so has been being a talking head on public radio and news channels talking about policy related to nuclear weapons and international defense. And probably the thing that is most significant about it in my life is that sometimes I will turn on NPR when I'm driving and I will hear his voice, and it's completely unexpected. And I'm a 41-year-old woman, and I'm still like turning on, hear my dad's voice, and I'm like, am I speeding? You know, are my hands at 10 and 2? Did I brush my teeth? Like, I just get this moment of, oh my God, my dad's here.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, it's basically he wants humans to not blow the world up.
That is absolutely correct. He's trying to slow down the doomsday clock.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so that's cool. And then one other thing that is not necessarily related to everything that we're going to talk to, but you have a master's in social work. Is that correct?
That is also true. Yes.
And you are a lecturer at HSU you currently are.
Yes, I am a lecturer at HSU, and I will stay there as long as they will have me, which is completely unknown.
Okay. Yeah. So in the midst of also, well, how'd you find your way to that work?
I found myself to the work. Social work is what I've always wanted to do. So I've been working in social service settings since I was like my very first jobs after this food service industry. So I started out doing case management and like sort of, you know, like line staff work in right out of college, and then got really interested in the idea of integrating outdoor work with working outdoors with working with my clients. I really love working with teenagers. That's kind of my ideal population. And so I was working in a juvenile detention facility in Philadelphia and got the opportunity to take some of them on day trips outside and had amazing experiences and realized that there was a way to combine some of my loves and then my professional passion. So that led me into learning more about wilderness therapy, which is what brought me to the West Coast. And that is how it all, and then the business stuff was a complete accident. So
how long ago did you find your way to Humboldt?
I moved to Oregon in 2005, and then started coming down to Humboldt in 2009 and moved here permanently in 2010.
Okay.
I didn't know it was permanent at the time. I think like a lot of us transplants, we're like, oh, this is a cool spot to hang out for a while, and then the roots just go deep.
Yeah, it sucks you in.
Well, we definitely want to talk about the business side of things then. And how did you said that was all by accident. How did that come about? You being part of Humboldt Bay Social.
My husband, John O'Connor, and I met working in wilderness therapy. He was a river guide and then running the river program at the wilderness therapy company where we were working. And I was a field therapist. And so I remember we met on the river. We met on the Deschutes River. We were running a trip together. And I was really impressed with him right away in the backcountry world. And
I don't know, Amy.
Okay, in the outdoor recreation world, many of us are, we're nomadic, right? We're living out of our cars. You know, we worked really hard for certain periods of time or certain seasons and then would take off and travel. And so when I met John, and he was also nomadic, he was living out of his truck, but he had a vision for his business, which at the time he was doing like adventure consulting and ropes course building and team building facilitation work and river guiding and really building that into a business. I remember sitting across, we were on the
the bank of the Deschutes one night and we're sitting around the fire. And I was like, dude, how old are you? What is really? And then finding out that he was a year younger than me, he recalls that my tone of voice in that interaction being much bitchier than I remember. I remember it being like, you know, positive inquiry, but he felt very condescended to in that moment. It worked out. So I think that was the first time that I'd ever, I think, met an entrepreneur who was my age, you know, not an adult. And over the course, in the early stages of our relationship, he was just doing that work and I was doing social work. And then gradually, as the renovation, when we bought our first building that we wanted to make into our home, that was the first time we did a project together besides our wedding. It's like, okay, maybe this is kind of cool. This would be a cool side project or side income stream. And then it's just grown and grown. So,
yeah. And what was that? What was that first building?
We bought this old building in Eureka on Fifth Street that we called the Boat Shop, which is, we called it that because that was the building had an old sign, like a street sign. And when you're on, because Fifth Street is Highway 101, if you want to do any sort of signage on exterior signage, you have to go through Caltrans. And we did not want to do that. So we found out, we did find records of the original sign that had been in the light box, which was the coat shop. And that was because it was a tailor and a men's millinery, milliner. So we just recreated that sign, no permits necessary, and named the building that. And
okay.
So began the long, awkward tradition of us naming things for reasons that make sense to us and are often confusing to other people.
It's a loophole that worked in your favor.
Exactly. Yeah. We're all about getting exploited. Yeah.
Maybe you can talk a little bit to us then about some of the other, you know, business ventures that you've had, or at least the ones that people in Humboldt might already know you for.
So a few years when we renovated the coat shop and we were living there, we also still loved traveling, and so we listed the apartment on Airbnb, and whenever it would get booked, we would just pack up and leave. And that was an amazing way to fund travel and exploration.
Yeah.
Packing. And we just had duffel bags and backpacks packed and ready to go pretty much all the time. And then we would just clear out. And there did get to be a point when it was getting so popular that we needed a place to stay because it'd be winter, you know, it was like 4th of July weekend and we couldn't figure out where to go that we could actually get a camp spot or things like that. Mm. So we started looking for another property, and we were looking for really just something with a yard. At the time I just wanted to get a dog. And then we ended up buying what is now Oyster Beach, which is 22 acres on the Samoa Peninsula. And that was a bit of an overreach.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting property. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the history of that? Because I think I know, but like...
Yeah, I mean, it's Wiat land and Wiat territory. In the turn of the century, you know, the late 1800s, the first people that we know of on record, the Nickerson family founded it as a ranch and built the buildings that are now on the property. Their home, a goat pen, a caretaker's residence, a stable, a servant's quarters, and lived there for decades and raised. It's unclear what crops they raised. They definitely raised animals. They had cattle and goats, horses.
Wow, they had cattle out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Just so everyone knows, this is out at the on the bay side of the tip of the North Jetty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're raising, and I think my understanding from Humboldt Historian magazine is that it was fairly common out there for people to have grazing animals. They also were terraforming the land. I mean, they planted all that eucalyptus. They planted the ivy. They were aggressively trying to change the terrain of that land. And we're still dealing with the ramifications of that now as the owners. Yeah. just like everybody else on the peninsula with invasives. And so the Nickerson family owned it. The last known resident of it was of the Nickerson family on that property was a young woman who's also a school teacher at Humboldt Hill. And that was before the bridges existed. And so she hired someone to row her from the Oyster Beach house over to Humboldt Hill in the morning and then row her back in the evenings.
That's amazing.
But then when she left, the house, the buildings have sort of changed hands over and over again. And various people lived in them and tended the land. And then in the 70s, the zoning changed for the entire peninsula to coastal dependent industry. My understanding is that they were, Humboldt County was courting Exxon and Shell, who were looking for coastal land to from which to build offshore drilling platforms. And so they were hoping to draw that industry into the bay. It didn't work, but the zoning stuck around, which is why that land and why lots of land on the peninsula is in this strange place where its historical use is completely contradictory and actually incompatible with its zoned use. And so the county is reevaluating all that zoning right now.
Yeah. And but you guys did a lot of work to get that. Like it was kind of dilapidated buildings when you bought it, and you had to like build in the existing footprint of the buildings there in order to get it ready for now they're vacation rentals. Yeah.
Right. We could just repair the existing buildings. We couldn't do any additional development. And so that's what we did piece by piece, salvaging everything that we could and keeping all of the footprints so not to impact the land anymore. And that was a really challenging one. It's just like a kind of a design build training ground to figure out how to make use of what you have and answer those complicated questions. So we did it one by one, and we didn't have any money. The owners of the property that sold it to us carried the loan for us. And then we did the renovations using a credit card, which I see these talks at like the university sometimes, the business departments. And I was like, let's just be real. Like, it's not the ideal way to do it, but if you don't have investors, you know, credit cards are a terrible financial deal, but they also, for a lot of young businesses, there's no other way to get credit, you know.
You got this this property to be another place for you to just stay other times is what you're saying. And then
we wanted to rent out the build. We thought it was just an amazing spot to, where you can feel like you're just in this other world, but you're right across the bay from the Bayshore Mall, right? Or you're like 10 minutes from Arcata. So it was just, it is a pretty magical spot. And definitely. We were excited. So we renovated and definitely almost killed ourselves multiple times sleeping on like freshly stained floors. Just stupid. Yeah, we just bounced between Oyster Beach and the coat shop over and over again until we had children and weren't as mobile.
And then right across the street from that is the Humboldt Bay Social Club, which I think is the thing that most people are familiar with. We kind of skipped over the tourism center, but I realized that we have lots to talk to you about. So I'm trying to speed through this.
The Oyster Beach actually came first, and then it was while we were doing the renovations at Oyster Beach that we made the plans for the Humboldt Bay Tourism Center, which then became Humboldt Bay Provisions. And that was really the first time, that was really John. Like John was doing that project with some friends of ours, partnered with them. I mean, I helped a little bit, but I was not very intimately involved.
Okay.
But when we opened up the social club, which we opened because once we were staying out there, we were really missing the walkability of Old Town, Eureka. Yeah. Just missing having coffee and food and a place to gather. And the building across the street was just sitting there vacant. And we tried to talk many of our friends into taking it over. No one would do it. Meredith from Six Rivers.
A call out.
No, she's amazing. Meredith and Meredith is, we're such huge fans of Six Rivers. And that's the reason that we have the Six Rivers wrought iron sign. On our hangar is in tribute to them and also an appreciation. And also we were courting them, and that was kind of their consolation prize. They didn't have the bandwidth. Talia and Meredith didn't have the bandwidth to open a second location, but they gave us that badass metalwork.
Well, so let's talk about the latest. So I went to the Poppin' Barclay social 420 soft opening the other night. you and I talked. It was a lovely time. And it struck me that this is something that people in Humboldt have talked about doing for as long as there have been talks about what legalization might look like. You know, normalizing cannabis, catering to a different clientele than has been traditionally associated with using weed. But then I walk into this place, the old Kmart, and I'm like, well, here it is, you know, like, okay. So first off, why don't you give, you know, the pitch for what this thing is, just so people are aware of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think Poppin' Barclay Social is us bringing the atmosphere and the vibe that you just spoke to about the social club to cannabis, right? Or providing that for cannabis consumption as opposed to booze, food, you know, drink. And it's been, it's been really rewarding for us to create the social club and see the kind of, to get the positive response that we have about just creating a really open and relaxed space. We often will say it's like your backyard, but better. And we're in Humboldt. Why would we not have that for cannabis? It's just, we feel like the hospitality industry has really been lagging in terms of embracing or even acknowledging cannabis in our community. And when you look at a region like Napa or Sonoma, and you look at the ways in which that hospitality is just intertwined with the wine industry in a way that is mutually beneficial and nuanced, right? Like every hotel is different, every offering is different. There's an acknowledgement of the region. It's not, you would be disappointed, I think, if you walked into a hotel in Sonoma and you could be in Houston, right? You want to feel like this lodging is a part of the entire experience of the region. And so that's what we wanted to create with Poppin' Barclay, is a place that you would gather with your friends, a place for the cannabis industry to be able to gather and be celebrated and not feel awkward, right? Or have to deal with any of the contradictions of regulations that often comes with, you know, having cannabis folks in a space that's serving alcohol.
Yeah. So it's a spa. You can get a massage there. You can eat there. There is a consumption lounge. How hard was this to do?
I don't know. I mean, hard.
Because you talk about, you know, having to jump through different regulatory bureaucracy. Right. Okay. So, you know, and I said, like, this is something that people have just thought, like, it seems obvious, like that Humboldt would have something like this, yet it took this long for it to actually occur.
I think it's incredibly complex. You know, opening any kind of business related to cannabis is incredibly complex. The state has made it that way. And I honestly think I think the state has incredibly good intentions and wants cannabis to be a prosperous element of the economy, but there's just so many complexities and there's so many different layers of regulation. And that is certainly the most challenging part, and especially doing something that has not been done, at least regionally. Yeah. Whenever you bring a new idea into a bureaucracy like the city of Eureka, right, or the Humboldt County, it's not that we got resistance. We just got lots of, oh no, like, okay, well, let's figure this out. So it was incredibly time consuming to develop the structure for it. And
I guess what I'm asking is, like, how is it that y'all got something like this realized before anyone else was able to do it?
That's a really good question. I think so much of it has to do with relationships and getting enough people together who wanted to do this and getting them all on the same team and, you know, aligning, you know, like just DuPont, farms and Emerald Queen farms and Sunrise Mountain farms. I mean, those farmers and those women led farms, they're just powerhouses, right? And that's just the owners and also their staff. And so getting them together and being like, we want to do this. And then talking to Papa and Barclay and having Papa and Barclay be excited and having some resources to put behind it. And also that piece of property. I mean, that Kmart is such a, it's overwhelming. It has so much square footage, but it just provide, you know, I think that that finding a good location that was affordable. Yeah, I think those things aligning. And then honestly, like my, I mean, John O'Connor, my husband, is relentless.
Relentless. Okay.
And that level of intensity is, it's intense.
And you're, the way you're describing him, you make him sound scary, but I've not found him to be a scary person.
It's like, it can be scary. It can be scary. I mean, not like,
he's always been nice to me. He never has intense me into a corner.
I'm never afraid of John, but there are certainly times when I'm like, no, can we just take it down a couple notches? And I think that he's really has an incredible vision for, and he has the ability to see things, you know, to find a way out of no way. And it's really inspiring and it's also exhausting. I mean, the pace that we're all working at right now, it's breakneck, and we have a goal in mind. And we knew when we started this, that this was going to be a really intense period of time. But I think that's part of it too, is just being committed to working this hard and getting to the yes. So when the answer comes back no from a regulatory body or from a vendor or from a contractor, we're like, are you sure? Like, I'm not going to stop. No. Let's figure out a different way.
So something I kind of honed in on at the event that I found to be symbolic of how you are trying to cater to a completely different potential emerging weed consumer is that when you first walked in the door, someone handed me a hot, moist towel. I was shocked. Was I shocked? No, I was just kind of like, oh, okay.
What did you do with it, Andrew? Do you know what you're supposed to do with one of those?
I did what I was told. I dabbed my face, right? Yes. I washed my hands, I was just like, I want to know, were you a part of the conversation that like, we're going to offer moist towels.
Okay. So like a lot of cool things at Humboldt Social, I am a part of the conversation. I'm usually the no vote. Like
So are you gonna throw under the bus whoever?
Me? No, So I think the thing about that, one of the things that I really love about traveling, and I think a lot of members of our team love about traveling, is seeing what other places are doing and be like, oh, we could do that, right? Or like, why don't we do that?
Sure. In Humboldt?
And I think that experience of walking into a hotel. I mean, I think the first time that ever happened to John and I was like our honeymoon. You know, we walked in some hotel in Hawaii and they gave it and you're like, why would I need this? Exactly what you said. But this is amazing. Now form and damp. Those are two really enjoyable things.
Love being warm and damp.
what we thought about was how to create this spa experience and like infused water. What contributes to that when you first walk into a space? Is it the music? It's the lighting. It's infused waters. And also thinking about the fact, the location, I think as Adam Grossman said at the soft opening that we're at the first stoplight in Eureka, and knowing that a lot of our guests or patrons will be coming out of the car. And this idea that you could come in and like get freshened up and then walk into the space felt really good to us.
You appreciate how
too classy for Goff a little.
No, it's not that it's too classy. You appreciate how the juxtaposition of what has of the traits that have traditionally been associated with people who smoke cannabis, weed, marijuana, whatever we call it, and now we're tonguing, you know, a moist towel to them. It was jarring. I'm not saying it was bad. I'm just like, we have entered a new paradigm now where we are.
It's so funny that you say that, because I was just having a conversation with a massage therapist about, how often she works on people who are coming down from the hill and just grime, right? Like people are coming into town, they're so stoked, they're ready to be there, and their bodies are worked and they need these spa services. And you're just talking about her, right? So in so many ways, the towel is really for just as much for traditional market folks that as it is for, you know, the boomers that are traveling through. So
So maybe there's nobody more appropriate to hand a moist towel to than
a hardworking farm hand trimmer.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Absolutely. Get pampered.
So you guys are gonna open on May 6th for everyone.
Yeah.
How long will it take before you know if this model is catching on or not?
Ooh. Quarter one will be a big one for us, just looking at
summer.
I think we'll look at the summer, and then we'll also really need to look at fall and winter and seeing what the local traffic does for us once the tourists are gone. We really don't know this post-COVID era what the year is going to be like for us. I mean, at the social club, we did remarkably well for COVID, considering we were prepared for the bottom to drop out of everything, and our occupancy rates actually increased, which is one of the reasons that we bought Scotia when we did. I think we'll want a I think we'll look at those first two quarters to know if one, we can keep the lights on for the fourth quarter, which is always the scariest one, or even the first quarter of 2022. And then if we can keep the lights on, we'll just keep going until we have a better idea. I mean, I think a lot of time the first year in a business, you're often just like tweaking everything, right? Like, okay, this is our staffing model. How does this really work? These are our hours. How do these hours really work? We envision something that's been part of our businesses from the very beginning is that who we envision our target market to be is always different. So when we did Humboldt Bay Tourism Center or Humboldt Bay Provisions, we had assumed a tourist market. We did not count on local folks hanging out at the bar. We envisioned people coming, doing their little wine flight of all the local wines, and then moving on. And that's why we had bar stools, and they were uncomfortable because we didn't want people to linger. And then over the years, we gradually expanded our seating options and our food menu when we realized that people wanted to come and stay. Yeah. So yeah, I think that these next three quarters will be a lot of that, a lot of tweaking, and then figuring out what's sustainable and finding out from our staff and our employees, you know, what they think and what they're experiencing as they interact with the guests, and then getting that feedback from guests too.
Yeah. That's interesting because you say, I think that a lot of the times when you are thinking about tourism for businesses, I also think that like people in Humboldt tend to get pretty excited when there's something new. So like a lot of the time it really is locals, I think, more than you think, who really want to, like with Humboldt Bay, you know, social club and Absolutely. Stuff. I think that that's something that's really appealing to locals.
I think there's something really amazing about being in any of our spaces when locals and tourists are mingling together, because I think that's what the tourists want too, right? They want to have the authentic Humboldt experience, and they want to know, you know, they want to get those insider tips. They want, if they're traveling with kids or dogs, they want their kids and dogs to interact with other like kids and dogs. And I think for us as residents, at least for myself and what I see the social club is, it's really rewarding to talk to travelers. One, it's interesting, like, oh, where are you from? But also to be able to share what we love about where we live with folks and see something maybe through their eyes is always.
Absolutely. So I'm wondering, because when you guys were talking about the Popham Barclay Lounge a little bit, you said, like Andrew said, you know, how you're the first to realize this. We've been wondering though a little bit, I mean, Eureka, the city of Eureka, and you're talking about, you know, the state regulations and stuff in some ways still make it difficult, but to the best of their ability, it seems like Eureka is kind of like flung the doors wide open for cannabis. They're like, yay, cannabis, please come on in. We see lots and lots of shops opening. And then, you know, a while back, I think it was probably about maybe about 2 years ago now that they legalized the smoking lounges. And I know that they've definitely issued at least a few permits for them, but was Papa and Berkeley actually the first smoking lounge to open?
They were the first manufacturing permit.
Okay.
But I do not believe that they're the first consumption lounge in Eureka. I could certainly find that out, but
the first I've heard a lot about. So, and I feel like we would know, you know, wouldn't that have been a big deal? The first lounge opening?
Ask our regulator.
For people who can't see, Amy's texting, phoning a friend here.
I'm totally phoning a friend.
So that's not necessarily what you meant then, Goff. Like, you weren't saying that this was the first smoking lounge?
Yeah, maybe not, but this is the first one that, you know, kind of opened with a bang and like, yeah. Hey, let's all look at this and see what we think about this.
Right. I mean, I think there have been other property or other businesses that have opened or gotten the permits and are kind of sitting on them as they wait, because there was certainly a rush in the beginning when Eureka opened up permitting for people just like, let me just lock this in right now.
Yeah.
Because some of those permits Eureka was very clear they're only available for a limited time. We will not be issuing these after, you know, after the fall. And so I think it is certainly, you know, I started to talk about the importance of partnering with the farms, and also partnering with Papa and Berkeley is opens up a lot of doors, because they just have such a team on this, and they've been working on permitting and various locations throughout Eureka. And also I think prior to that, our small business experience of getting building all kinds of building and operating permits through the city means that it's one of the pleasures of working in a small community is that, you know, people, you know, you can get Swan on the phone. We could get Rob Humlin on the phone and be like, hey, I think I'm doing this right, but are you sure? And especially with the cannabis stuff. So people just didn't know, right? People were essentially making it up as they went along and kind of check. We were all just checking with each other. Like, does this sound right? Hold on. I mean, basically what I just did right now, right? Like, let me phone a friend up in Santa Rosa or Sacramento and find out if that's kosher. So, and I think we're really lucky with the Kmart location that once Papa and Berkeley secured it and got all the manufacturing permits, and some of those inspections and relationships were already established when we came in to just take over this small portion of the space.
Yeah. I do have to say, I like too that where the Kmart is located, I like the idea that this is like one of the first things that basically greets people as they enter Eureka. It's like, smoking lounge right away. Like, this is going to be your experience. Come on in, get a hot, moist towel. You've been driving for a while, and you know, light one up and put this moist towel on your face.
I think that was also some of our thinking around, you know, the color scheme and the imagery that we use, is that as much as I think the green cross or the bright green cannabis leaf or the Buddha and all those things are very iconic representations of cannabis, it's really, we really wanted to do something that was less cliched than that and showed, and we really believe strongly in normalizing cannabis. And so, you know, when you go into wine country and you walk into a hotel, you don't see, like, one, it doesn't just reek of booze inside. And like, two, you're not just, the wallpaper isn't just emblazoned with like wine bottles or glasses. Like, it doesn't, everything doesn't have to be just on your nose or on the nose or in your face. And so we went with a more subtle color palette and wanted to feel like you can walk in to Papa and Berkeley Social and have a wonderful restorative time and not consume any cannabis at all.
Sure.
You can also come in and buy some of the best products that we think Humboldt has to offer.
Yeah. So let's talk about another project then, you know, that you mentioned a little bit ago, which is of course the Humboldt Bay Social taking over and revamping the Scotia Lodge. I think I just have to ask, because we definitely tend to think of Eureka and Arcata as kind of the social hubs of Humboldt. What made you decide to go for a business in Scotia?
So I think that we always shop the clearance section of real estate in Humboldt County.
Sure.
I'm an avid thrifter. You know, I enjoy the hunt. Grocery outlet is my jam. I don't want to go to a grocery store where I can just find whatever I want. No, mm-hmm. I want to make my selections based on the weird stuff that's available.
Bargain hunter, yeah.
So, you know, every property that we've purchased, the Coat Shop, Oyster Beach, and then now Scotia, and even, I mean, we don't own the building that Humboldt Bay Social Club is in. We lease right. that from the city, but all of those had been vacant for a long time and were just sitting there on the market. And I think there's something that, one, because we work with very limited funds and very small budgets, we need that for our financial model to work. But also there's something really beautiful about finding a space that people have forgotten about or have underappreciated and giving it another chance or just opening it back up. And it's always fascinating, like every time we do these projects, not with the Coat Shop, but with Oyster Beach and with Scotia, so many people are like, oh yeah, I almost bought that. Right? Oh yeah, I thought about that. Yeah, my dad was gonna do that. You know, like everyone will tell you that in the last.
That's a weird flex.
Yeah, totally. Oh yeah, my family was gonna do that. I'm like, yeah, well, that would have been awesome. I would be great if you had done that. I would be much higher.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think Scotia is one, I mean, like Samoa, where on the peninsula, it's just such a unique place and the history of company towns are just incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's right at the top of the Avenue of the Giants mm-hmm. and right on the Eel River. It's in the Redwoods. It's an incredibly beautiful building. I mean, that lobby is just breathtaking. And yes, it's an enormous amount of work and it was neglected for a long time. I mean, I think the town of Scotia and then the company that purchased the town after Palco shut down, they did the best that they could, but they also had a very limited budget allocated for that, for taking care of the lodge. And so I think that the Southern Humboldt and then that tip of Northern Humboldt that's really Southern, right? It's just underserved and we have a massive county. We have a massive amount of geography. We have not a massive amount of people, but lots of people that are spread out. And so the idea of taking our model to an area that we don't spend a lot of time or we don't spend enough time really is really exciting for us.
Yeah. And how is it going when you announced it? You said you were looking at a reopening goal of June. That's coming up. Are we still?
That was stupid. Yeah, no.
Sorry. I know that tends to never be.
Yeah, this is the part of our business model where we're like, boom, because the holding costs on a building like Scotia are enormous, right? The water bill, ridiculous. The mortgage, we wanted, you know, it is in our best interest as a business to get that revenue flowing as soon as possible. We were doing renovations at Scotia and Pop and Barclay Social at the same time. We would just stretch ourselves too thin. So July, we're going to open in July.
Okay. Oh, that's
open with however many rooms we have done. So it might be 5, it might be 20. I don't know. Some days I'm like, it's going to all get done. And other days I'm like, oh my God, I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
But no, things are flying right now.
Okay. Yeah.
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 And what are some of the long-term plans for that? You know, I think, you know, we had the article on Loco, but you know, I never assume that people read and listen. Those are two different audiences in my mind.
Be so modest. Everyone's source of inspiration.
Oh, I'm just saying some people listen to things and some people read things. You know,
so, yeah. So the phase one will be as many rooms as we can open out of the 22 that are currently that are on the second floor. So we will open up as much of the second floor as we can. We'll open up the bar and the restaurant and the grounds for events and for eating and drinking outdoors. in the end of summer, we hope to be submitting our plans and permits for the construction of our pool and soaking tubs, which will be in the back, where there's currently just like a gravel lot. So the Scotia Lodge is shaped like a C, and in the middle is a gravel lot that right now we just use for parking. And we will transform that into a huge deck space with a pool and then soaking tubs that can, some that will be large enough to share and others that will be private, more like Finnish country. Yeah. And we will be, so hopefully those pools will be done in time for season open next summer.
Okay.
And then with that will hopefully also come the third floor and the spa. Cool.
Yeah. So one thing that all the projects you've undertaken in Humboldt seem to have in common is that they all have there's a high value for a very specific aesthetic. Like in that Scotia Lodge article, I think you all refer to it as warm Scandinavian. What is that, by the way? What is, define warm Scandinavian for me.
Yeah, so warm Scandinavian for us is lots of woods and natural textures, but also an eye towards minimalism. So you don't need a ton of furniture or like a ton of sort of accessories to create a feeling of coziness and warmth. And we think that space in Scotia, especially that first floor, really high ceilings, really beautiful old wood. And we didn't, as much as we loved some of the older Victorian furniture that was there, it's very heavy. And it's also not usually very durable when you're talking about hospitality environment. And so warm Scandinavian for us is something that's very welcoming, but also very light in the sense of like simplest clean lines, and more using wood and leather and linen and sisal as opposed to acrylics or artificial.
So from where I sit, you know, with the ventures of yours that are already going, you know, the Humboldt Bay Social Club being the main example, I feel like that's one of the main things that people are drawn to, is, you know, again, you have a high value for aesthetics. If, you know, if you're a business, how important is a strong aesthetic and how do you dial it in so it's just right? What are the things you think about? Because I think that's kind of your wheelhouse, especially in these things. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the aesthetic and the guest experience go hand in hand. And we're living in a world that is so much marketing is done virtually that how your space looks is what will be one of the driving forces behind the customer's booking decisions. So a huge number of our customers and our guests come to us through social media. So they are just seeing a picture. Sometimes they're not even reading the words. I work really hard on those captions, you know, but they're just so.
I know the feeling. Yeah.
So I think having a distinctive, we always create a brand book for every single project. And that is everything from our vision and our mission statements to images. Either literal, you know, images of the project as it's going or just aspirational images. We create a color palette. We think about fonts. But also we often we'll just brainstorm adjectives for, you know, what will the space feel like? What do you want it to be like? And then one of the things that John is really good at, because I'm a thrifter, right? I'm a grocery outlet designer. Yeah. I tend to get real distracted by shiny objects, you know, so I'll be like, that chair. And John is like, is it warm Scandinavian, right? Is it in our color palette? Is it in our budget? And I'm like, I know, but look at it. It is amazing and so weird and I'll find a place for it.
Yeah.
So I think we balance each other out. And it's the same for him. He'll send me pictures. Yeah. What is that? Yeah. We've designed spaces separately, but it's always a lot. It comes out a lot better when we do it together.
Yeah, when we came down to do that Scotia article, you were in the midst of getting ready for the estate sale. And I feel like I saw you and John just clash over, what was it? Like like an end table or something. It was just like, it was World War III over this end table.
Oh my God. Well, it's so funny. I mean, it's not, it's funny. It's like sometimes it's like those small things are, first of all, that's a total exaggeration. It was not
like, yes, absolutely. Oh, 100%. Yeah.
But it's also like, it's sometimes it does feel like that when you're talking about aesthetics and the importance of the brand. You're like, no, this, if this, like, you know, I'm looking at the switch plate behind you, Stephanie, and I'm like, if that was plastic, oh, it would mess up the whole thing, right? Like,
I was thinking that maybe this was almost like a warm Scandinavian vibe going on behind me, actually, as you were talking about it.
Plate, I just was scuffing up some old ones to make them look older.
Yeah, if that was plastic, that would be weird. I agree with you.
Get it out of there.
So I feel like we need to talk about, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, you know, COVID and how it's changed, you know, how marketing works. But like all of these business ventures that you're doing and some that you've even, you know, opened have been during COVID, like during this pandemic, you know, how you're like, don't remind me. Yeah, I know. You are aware that this is happening. But yeah, I mean, sorry, go ahead.
I think it's been, well, one, you know, COVID was very, as much as it was a crisis for our business, we were very well set up to survive COVID because we have cabins, you know, we do self-check-in, we have a big outdoor space. So
yeah,
we certainly, I mean, our wedding season was off.
And that's what I was just saying. I know a couple weddings that were going to be there that were canceled. Yeah.
And initially we were shut down, and then we had a number of our staff that could not work and were not comfortable. I mean, we, just like everybody else, we suddenly had our children with us all the time. And we had to make lots and lots of decisions. And I think we were lucky with the social club that we, you know, our business model is so modest. Our targets, what we need, the revenue that we need to break even and be sustainable is so much lower than a lot of places we were able to survive at this reduced capacity. And while there was a period of time when we were getting lots of cancellations and reschedulings, we also had many guests that had canceled much more elaborate plans over the summer and the fall. And, you know, they were going to Patagonia or they were going on a cruise, and now they were on a road trip. And we saw, I think having that experience really changed the way that we were envisioning these new projects coming up, right? So now when we're designing the rooms, we're like, okay, we need workspaces, right? We need more rooms with more beds, because now we have these folks that are traveling with their grown kids, not just their little ones, but they've got their high schoolers or their college age kids with them. And always really focusing on keeping people outside as much as possible. So you see that at Popham Barclay, and you see that at the Scotia Lodge design as well. One that's just healthier for everybody pre-COVID, during, and post. And we are lucky enough to live in a temperate climate where, yes, rain is terrible, but it's not 30 degrees below zero. It's not snow. It's not, you know, so hot that you can't breathe outside. So we really want to keep taking advantage of that.
Yeah. And as you're going back to talking at the very beginning about the work that you used to do, I mean, you both worked doing outdoor therapy. And so obviously that's informed the way that you've built your businesses. You care a lot about outdoor spaces, which have become more important now than ever.
I've literally never thought about that connection, but yes.
That was one of the first things I thought.
Yeah. You didn't even realize that you were doing
it. Your outdoor therapy naturally continue to now.
Therapy around the fires.
But you talked about a point, you know, how much you love, you know, tourists and locals mingling together. And I'm just thinking about, you know, when we're hopefully going to get there again. You know, I've been as we're, you know, coming out of this pandemic and more people are getting vaccinated and more people are starting to travel, I think, you know, safely. Our officials have definitely been talking a lot about the critical role that tourism is going to play, you know, in our economic recovery. It seems like you guys, again, like you're in a good position for that. And I think you touched about on this a little bit, but you know, how do you sort of see the tourism industry changing as we move forward?
Yeah, I think what we've seen a lot is that during the pandemic, that roadside motels thrived while larger hotel or resorts that really catered to conferences and business travelers, those are the ones that were really hit very hard. Mm-hmm. What we always see is that during recessions of any kind, right, economic and also this like health related recession, regional travel remains a very strong sector. And so I think we should continue to be prepared for that moving forward, that Humboldt County is going to continue to be a destination for regional travelers. And we need to build out our infrastructure in order to support that. And that means that the county, like the Lodging Alliance, you know, the Visitors Bureau, they have to really become more sophisticated in the way that they follow trends in travel and support the fledgling hospitality industry that is here. I mean, there are some amazing venues here and restaurants and shops, but people really create their own informal support networks. There's not a massive amount of support on a governmental level in terms of training, in terms of marketing outside of the region, in terms of support for growth. And so I think that I would love to see that. I would love to see Humboldt County really commit to being a tourist destination and not just relying on the Redwoods to do that marketing for us, but really we're actually an amazing community and people come, they don't just come, they might come for the Redwoods, but they should stay because they want to explore Arcata. They want to explore, they want to explore Eureka. They want to explore Fortuna. They want to walk along the rivers. They want to visit cannabis farms. They want to do all those things.
I feel like I've heard that critique a lot, that just we have, as you said earlier, we've kind of lagged in being forward thinking about the way that we pursue tourists and tourism dollars. We'll wrap on this. I realize that you have little people who are demanding your attention and everything, but
they seem to have. But I'm good.
Okay, but we just want to thank you. You've been for being generous with your time and jumping in here on this weird screen world that we all just live now. But I wanted to end on this, you know, a phrase that I heard numerous times at the Pop and Barclay social soft opening event is just, you know, normalizing cannabis. We are normalizing cannabis. And it occurs to me that maybe you are a good case study, like, you know, because you here you are, you're doing, you know, all these things. You have two little people running around. So you're a mom, you're a business owner. What role does cannabis play in your life?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. I think I am probably a test case in that. I would say that cannabis has been a part of my life since I was a teenager, but I was a completely uninformed cannabis user, right? I was just like using what was around and what, you know, I could get. And then it was
smoking out of apple cores. And
exactly. And, you know, loved being high, but never thought about the industry or where it came from. And it wasn't until moving to Humboldt County that, I think when I moved to Humboldt County in 2010, that was a time when there was so much conversation in Humboldt about we're more than cannabis, right? Or like we're more than weed and we're more, like, it's been really exciting to see that conversation shift to like, let's just, this, I think, willful ignorance or maybe ignoring the cannabis industry and the traditional market and really
the amount, the incredible contribution that cannabis makes to our community, right?
Yeah. Like
that, and so for me, I also, and this is always weird to say as a bar owner, that I, especially during the pandemic, but even prior, you know, I come from a family of addicts and alcoholics. Like, I know how problematic alcohol is. As I get older, I see the negative effects and impacts of alcohol in my own life. That, you know, if I have anything to drink, I'm hungover the next day. Anything. Yeah. I am too old for this. And so I think, like a lot of folks, especially during the pandemic, I was really reevaluating my relationship with alcohol. What do I use it for? How do I medicate? What am I medicating? Are there other ways that I can get, that I can relax or be social that don't, doesn't involve doing something that my body is like clearly rejecting? And I think, you know, we have such, I have so much more of a sophisticated understanding of cannabis because of the relationships that I have with growers now, right? Who will, I mean, or like Guy at the, you know, if you sit with Guy from Papa and Barclay, the guy who's wearing the three-piece cannabis. Yes.
You can't miss him.
Like the science, the chemistry, you know, the just the botany of the plant and what it is good for is so, there's just so many uses for it that I think that we don't talk about and that we're not educating a wide consumer base for. So for me, it has been learning about microdosing, that I can get like a little bit high and I don't have to lose my entire short-term memory, right? Because I love that, right? I do really enjoy that at the end of the night, but I also I also want to be on the river and feel relaxed, but also competent to drive or to watch my kids in the river and those kinds of things. So our business model has changed, my relationship with cannabis has deepened and I love it. And I love being surrounded by people who are so knowledgeable and so willing to teach.
Yeah. It's been interesting in Humboldt, as you say, to watch the way that perceptions about cannabis has developed. Cause as much as we are associated with the plant, there has always been a huge segment of the population that has been resistant to it. You know, has demonized it. And now, you know, because it is a commodity, you know, because it makes sense to get involved. A lot of those people have come around, and I've just been curious if they are also going to become, you know, consumers in some, you know, unique way. Or there's so many more ways to utilize cannabis now.
If I use a tincture, I'm like at a 0.25 max. Probably. Yeah. Tinctures the CBD only tinctures are amazing for me, like in terms of muscle recovery. And I think that in terms of educating folks that would never, one of the things I just posted about this actually on our social media yesterday, that when we first started doing some work with Pop and Barclay, we would have pain balm and patches on site and we would give them to our contractors. And it was pretty amazing to see folks that would never smoke weed, right? They would never, ever consider that. And they would, but then they would come back and be like, can I have more of that balm? Can I have more of those patches? Yeah. And so, and like now, I mean, those are the things like we send, like those are what I give my parents and my aunts and uncles, right? Now they're onto the THC tinctures, right? But for arthritis, right? And for back pain and for neck pain and for just everything that comes with being in the design build industry, that pain management is a real challenge. Opioids are a health crisis and they're a crisis here in Humboldt County. So any way that we can help people medicate their pain in a way that is not going to involve prescription painkillers, I think is a big win for our entire region. But I mean, honestly, I really like smoking. I like dog walker pre-rolls because I never got good at rolling myself. I know I should. It takes fucking forever. Yeah. Now I'm in the industry. So people are like giving me stuff, which is amazing. I mean, I'll take, you know, two hits pretty much does me for the end of the night. And then sometimes I will, when I come home, take a gummy, like a 5 milligram gummy or a 10 milligram gummy, depending. And then it kind of hits as the kids are going to bed. So it's perfect.
Nice. Yeah. I love this.
You taking notes, Steph?
I think that the folks, like I was reading the comments on some of the recent, you know, the Time Standard article that came out in Loco, and there's always people
I
know, right? They're like, it's so dangerous. Everyone's gonna be driving, yes. You know, it's dangerous. I'm like, you go to bars.
I know. Yeah. As a longtime bartender, I just always think that that's really funny that people are so concerned about that when I'm like, the alcohol, this is.
Yeah. I did an interview.
We have 100 bars in Humboldt. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did an interview with somebody who's like, oh, you're open, you know, you're cannabis friendly. Do you have relationships with the local hospitals in case someone gets too high? I've had a bar for a really long time and no one has ever asked me that question
Isn't that funny? And that's really hilarious considering that with, you know, if you smoke too much pot, you might think you're gonna die, but you will not. There's absolutely no way. It's never happened. Alcohol, on the other hand, you could very much die from alcohol poisoning. Yeah. Like, I don't understand why.
I have this memory of being in high school and going to a party with a friend who took gravity bong hits, and I brought her back.
Oh, yeah.
And she completely panicked. She called 911 on herself, sure. I think, at the party. So I went home and I was like, Mom, I had to wake up my mom. I was like, Mom, I don't know what to do. You know, she's freaking out. And she was like, you know, I need to go to the hospital. And I remember my mom stroking her hair and be like, honey, there's nothing they can do for you at the hospital except give you water and tell you to go to sleep. And that's what we're going to do here. You know, this is going to be fine. So I think that's another example of some of the education that we need to provide in our community about what safe use looks like, that you can moderate your use. And in many ways, it's so much more predictable dosage of cannabis and alcohol or other drugs. And there are ways for you to get exactly the kind of high that you want. And there are people that can help you do that.
I feel like I end up saying this to a lot of the people that we have on here. Amy, don't read the comments. It's just gonna hurt your brain, and you don't want that.
Yeah. Well, I do all the social media for all of our businesses, and I am, as we grow larger, there's more engagement, and I'm starting to reevaluate some of our policies around it. And what do we comment on? When do I respond to people? You know, how do you manage negative comments? Or we don't get a lot of negative comments. I think more that sometimes in the social media commenting world, people just feel comfortable saying things in a way that in real life would be rude.
Yeah. Right?
Or even if it's just the way they phrase a question, it's like it reads demanding in a way that they probably don't intend, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think we'll jump right on that and answer that question.
I think we're all, at least, you know, I am. I think we're all kind of renegotiating what our relationship with social media is, because, you know, especially in the last 5 years, you know, like with when Trump got elected, it's the tone of the internet just drastically shifted into a dark place. And I think people that were used to doing things without, I don't need this. This is not a real, again, representation of how people are feeling. These are the loudest people that have realized that this is their weapon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so more and more of my friends are just deleting their Facebook accounts and letting the people that want to scream, they can continue to scream there, but we got shit to do. We're doing other stuff. And it's time to go back into the real world.
Yes. Okay. So we're reevaluating our relationship with social media, alcohol, and cannabis. Yeah.
That's right. Yes. Oh, I love it. Beautiful way to wrap it all up.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you, Amy, for taking the time to chat with us about all of this. It's been really great.
Oh my goodness, thank you for having me. It was so fun.
Yeah, we're excited to see how these things pan out. Because again, it's really, really ambitious what y'all are undertaking.
Thank you both.
All right. Bye. All right. Well, thank you so much to Amy Cerencioni O'Connor of Humble Face Social for chatting with us today about some of these wonderful projects, both cannabis related and not. And I'm really happy to talk to another cannabis mom.
Yeah, we're normal.
About smoking our two hits a night after the kids are in bed.
We are normalizing momming while slightly buzzed.
I think it's time. You know, the whole moms drinking wine, the wine moms thing.
My moms have been going strong for millennium.
Yeah, so it's time to start the cannabis moms. Pre-roll moms.
Well, with that, again, thank you for tuning in to our little podcast experiment. Another week. Wear your masks, get vaccinated, and we'll see you. This is going to be a good summer. We'll see you. We'll see you out there at some point.
We're going to see you out there at the Papa Barkley Social Lounge, whatever it's called. Cannabis. Sure. Consumption chill spa. Yeah, maybe. I want to go in there and get that.
It's moist, on my drive home.
Moist towel.
Yeah. You didn't need for moist towel, you just go.
Yeah, I go for the candles, but I stay for the hot, moist towels.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks, Humboldt. Bye-bye.